We begin this hour, however, looking at the latest initiative from the first African-American president, Barack Obama. His latest initiative is seeking fiscal justice with a plan to tax couples making $500,000 a year or more. The president is expected to make this tax program part of his theme of addressing income inequality in the State of the Union address upcoming. With me now from the Capitol is Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick. Todd, welcome to the Takeaway.
Hi, John.
So this is terribly new, this proposal. The income level seems to be a slight tweak, but this is something the president has been after for a while.
Parts of the proposal are new, parts are brand new, and they're all going to hopefully, in the president's mind, pay for some of the initiatives that he's been touting as he travels around the country in the run-up to the State of the Union address tomorrow. Well, John, the president wants to raise about $320 billion through changes in taxes. And you mentioned those couples making $500,000 or more. Here's how he wants to do it. The capital gains rate, you've heard of that. This is not income tax. This is the tax that people pay when they sell stock securities, when they make a lot of money, when you hold them for over a year. Well, right now, for top income households, that capital gains rate is 24%. And a lot of analysts will tell you that that, for most people, is underneath the rate for income, which means very wealthy people who sell stocks pay less tax on it than average working people. The president says raise that. Raise it from 24% up to 28% for couples making over that $500,000 per year. There's a couple other proposals to eliminate something called the step-up basis. That's a fancy way of saying, John, if you have a lot of stocks and securities and you die and give them to your kids don't pay any capital gains on the money that you've made over a lifetime of holding those stocks. It's an advantage. The president says subject that bequeathed stock to capital gains taxes. And another thing, how about charging the big banks 0.07% if they have over $50 billion in assets? Take all that together, you raise about $320 billion, and the Treasury and the White House point out you raised 99% of it from the top 1%.
And is this likely to attract the familiar blowback from the Republican Congress, or is it designed to really address some of their concerns?
Oh, no, the former. This has and will attract some of the familiar blowback. You've already seen responses from Republicans on the Hill who, after all, are the ones who are responsible for writing new tax policy and will, in an attempt to reform the tax code upcoming later on this year. No, they call this raising more taxes and spending it on social programs, the old sort of tax and spend mantra of liberals. Now, there is some agreement, though, buried deep within this proposal. The president wants to take a lot of this money, this $320 billion that we talked about, and transfer it elsewhere in the tax code largely. Triple the value of the child tax credit. Have a $500 second earner credit to encourage second earners in the household to go to work. A lot of people, John, analysts will tell you, have been staying home and not getting that second job because wages are stagnant. We all know that for the last 15 years. If wages are stagnant, it takes away a lot of the incentive to go out and get that second job because you have to pay for childcare and commuting costs and not being with your kids. A lot of people don't bother. That's bad for the economy. Expand the tuition college tax credit. Make more of it refundable. And here's one that does have bipartisan support. Expanding the earned income tax credit for some workers. Paul Ryan agrees with that one. Now, you asked, is there going to be a lot of agreement from Republicans on these specific proposals? The answer is no. But we've talked about tax reform, the big giant reform that Republicans and some Democrats want to do. Each of these items in here could be bargaining chips for the president. They're going to need his signature if they want to reform the tax code, lower corporate taxes, and raise up to $1 trillion in tax reform. If they want to do that, they need the president. And the president can bargain. He may get a couple of these things buried in there. He's never going to get the whole thing. This whole thing is a political message. Tax the very, very rich and help the middle income, middle class people whose wages have been left behind over the last 15 years.
Does this proposal have some sort of strategic value in the sense that it puts Republicans in a position of having to vote for lowering taxes or not raising taxes on this level of income?
Well, it does have a political basis in the end, because I think the president, like you and I, John, know that this proposal writ large is going nowhere in Congress. So it absolutely has a political basis. Now, will Republicans be forced to vote on lowering taxes. That really depends on the type of tax reform that they write. It's going to be difficult in a lot of cases for Democrats to force votes for these types of things that the president wants. They may have one or two opportunities down the road to say, are you for or against, you know, a surcharge on big banks kind of thing, something that liberals would love to see. Are you for or against raising the capital gains rate on the very richest stockholders, something liberals would love to see. They may get a shot or two at it, but it's really going to be up to Paul Ryan and John Boehner and the Republican tax writers on the Hill, Orrin Hatch, to go to the president with their proposal and then let him try to bargain with them for one or two things he needs if they want to get his signature.
Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, thanks so much.
You got it, John.
Here's someone who's tired of the nasty rhetoric on Capitol Hill regarding taxes and is fine with being taxed. Eric Schoenberg is the wealthy chairman of the board at CampusWorks Incorporated, a technology management company. He's also a member of the Patriotic Millionaires, a group of wealthy Americans who are in favor of raising taxes for the rich. Welcome, Eric.
Hello.
Now, you're a business school professor, you're a chairman of a financial institution, and a member of this group, Patriotic Millionaires. Do you believe that people whose incomes are higher than $500,000 a year should be a kind of an ATM for the federal government?
Well, I'm not quite sure whether I would put it that way, but I certainly do believe that people who are in the fortunate position of earning lots of money are probably paying less taxes than they ought to be.
And what would you do to change that? Would you impose a federal tax, or would you think that these people should be more forthcoming about the taxes they already are employed to pay?
Well, I mean, I think there are a lot of separate issues. I'm certainly in support of the president's new proposal. I think it makes some important points. One thing I will note is the current debate about inequality. There are a lot of questions among the economics community and the public policy community in general about what's causing this drive towards greater inequality. One thing that I think is undeniable, however, is that when you have a tax policy that taxes income from wealth at a lower rate than it taxes income from labor, you're simply going to exacerbate the problem. And that's the situation we're in today. I pay taxes at a substantially lower rate on my income from capital than I do on my income from when I actually work. And I think that gap needs to be closed.
A lot of people in the sort of mid-high income zone earn their salary and then invest it and then pay a capital gain that it feels like an additional tax, a double tax on their income. It's not as though their trust fund is being taxed. It's income that they put away in investments. How would you deal with that?
Well, I think it's an inaccurate characterization of the situation. When you invest money, you get additional earnings on that invested money. I'm not quite sure why people think that this somehow is double taxation. I would further note that one of the key points of the president's proposal is, in fact, to ensure that people of substantial wealth, the money is, in fact, taxed at least once. Under current tax policy, when somebody passes away and they have substantial investments that they had not previously sold or liquidated, no capital gains tax has yet been paid on it. Under current law, when you die, the basis, that is to say the level above which further gains are taxed, is reset at the level of what it's worth at the time you die. The president proposes to change that such that when you die, you have to pay capital gains tax on accumulated gains. To me, this is single taxation. This is not double taxation.
What about death taxation? These are terms that are used by the opposition to create a sense of outrage over proposals which you consider to be fairly straightforward fiscal mechanisms.
You know, nobody really likes paying taxes, and I'm not going to claim that I particularly enjoy it either. But the fact is the government needs a substantial amount of money to run. And if you look at, you know, what is better, taxing people when they earn money for working as a fireman, a teacher, a business executive, or taxing large estates when that money gets passed on to an additional generation? It seems to me that it is eminently fair to ask people who are inheriting large amounts of money to contribute some portion of that to the public purse. So this idea of death taxes is, I think, an unfortunate term. You know, my view is this is an important way that we're going to prevent the kind of intergenerational inequality, the kind of wealthy aristocracy that this country was founded to oppose.
What do patriotic millionaires have as their message, aside from what you've already said here? Are you recruiting individuals? Are you lobbying individuals? Do you have any sense that people listen to what millionaires say?
Well, we are a loosely affiliated group of people who are basically trying to take advantage of the fact that, yes, in this country, people have a great deal of interest in what the wealthy have to say. And this group of wealthy individuals is basically saying, in essence, look, we are in all in this together. We all benefit when we have a society that works for everybody, when we have a society that offers equal opportunity to everybody. And the wealthy have a particularly important role to help ensure that that takes place. We are not generally advocating for particular policies, but more generally for this principle that everybody ought to contribute and the wealthy who've done so well out of the economy for the last few decades ought to take the first step in making those contributions.
Was your last national vote for Democrats or for Republicans, Eric?
Well, I do nowadays tend to vote Democratic, although I will note when I originally registered to vote back in the 1980s, I was registered as a Republican. And in fact, I think I am currently registered as a Republican as well. So I have no opposition to Republican candidates. I just feel that the Republican Party as a whole has gone so extreme in opposing any attempt to have the wealthy of this country contribute to the greater good that I do tend to vote Democratic.
Eric Schoenberg, thanks so much.
Thank you.
He's the chairman of the board at CampusWorks, a technology management company, and a member of Patriotic Millionaires.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.